I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for choosing this KAXE KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening. Right now, we're going to continue our conversation about birds and forests. Mark Jacobs is joining us. He's the retired land commissioner of Aiken County. He works now with organizations like Dovetail Partners. That's a nonprofit that fosters sustainability and responsible behaviors through collaboration. Also joining us is researcher Alexis Grindy. She is a wildlife ecologist with NRRI, the Natural Resources Research Institute. She leads ornithologists in the forests and land group at NRRI, and she's here today to talk with us about her work and about bird decline. Welcome, Alexis. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's get kind of an introduction. We've talked to folks over the years with NRRI. Tell us a little bit about what you do there and what the organization is.
Sure. Well, NRRI is an applied research institute, and there's a variety of different research that goes on there, all the way from water and minerals and mining. But I work in the forest and land group, and specifically I run the avian ecology lab. And we basically use birds as environmental indicators and do research to try and inform forest management, but also prevent and inform conservation plans, and try and prevent the loss of species from Minnesota and mitigate declining populations.
Alexis, I've dealt with some folks over there over the years, and I know that you guys have had a ground breeding bird survey going on. Are there other surveys that you're working with, or maybe you can talk a little bit about those birds that that breed and nest on the ground?
Yeah, so that's part of our, we have quite a few different monitoring programs that we do, and then we also have shorter term research projects that focus on different environmental questions. But one of the big programs that we have is our National Forest Monitoring Programs, and those take place in Chippewa National Forest and Superior National Forest. And they're one of the longest breeding bird surveys that are habitat based in the country. So they were started in 1991. And from that monitoring, we can focus in on species of conservation interests or guilds, in the case that you're asking, associated with ground nesting birds, for example, to see what might be going on with those different species or groups of species. Are their populations declining, and what might be causing those declines?
One of the things that occurs to me is that when you're working with birds in bird habitat, some birds want one kind of habitat and other birds want another. How do you make a decision based on what birds are going to be helped out by either logging an area or not logging an area, keeping it pristine as a forest?
That's a great question, and one of the trickiest parts of what we do is, so we have hundreds of breeding bird species in Minnesota, and we document over 120 breeding forest bird species in our work annually, and they all have different habitat needs. They all have different niches. They all like different types of tree species. Some like a water component, some like upland. And so really the name of the game is trying to make sure that we maintain all these different and unique habitats on the ground over time. Generally speaking, it's really easy to cut down an aspen forest and get it to regenerate, right? That can happen in decades or so. We can get trees that are big to a lot of mature forest breeding bird species. It's a lot harder to cut down a black spruce forest, for example, in a bog and try and get it to regenerate to a state where a mature forest breeding black spruce species would use it, because it takes about 100 years. And so thinking about that spatial but also temporal sort of piece of forest management and what the birds are considering habitat is really important. And so that's what we try and do, is sort of integrate all that information over space and time. And it's tricky, but if the name of the game is to conserve biodiversity, that's exactly what needs to be done.
You know, last month, Mark, you introduced us to Peter Deeser, and we talked about the 3 billion bird decline over the past 50 years. And he said that there are nationwide forest bird declines associated with forest types that are found in our region. So, Alexis, the question to you, what do Minnesota forests look like from a bird's perspective?
That's a great question. So that paper was really focused on all of North America and indicated that both eastern and western forest breeding bird species were declining. And with a lot of the studies that we do in the Great Lakes, but also specifically in Minnesota, we can sort of zoom in on that and get more detailed habitat information about our different bird species. And so what our long-term monitoring programs have shown us is that overall, in Superior and Chippewa National Forest, there are a lot of species. The majority of species are either stable in population, meaning they haven't really changed since the early 90s, or even increasing. And so in Chippewa National Forest, based on our results from 2020, there's about 52 out of 77 species that were increasing or stable. And in Superior National Forest, there was 42 species that were had increasing or stable populations. So that's really good news. However, the sort of other side of the coin is that there was about 24 species that were decreasing in Chippewa, and about, or sorry, 24% of the species were decreasing in Chippewa National Forest, and 36% of the species were decreasing in Superior National Forest. That's really important because that's almost doubled in the past 10 years. So we've had more species declining over the past 10 years than we had the previous 10 or 20 years of the program. And I think that's what we're seeing nationally, and it's really sort of a cause for concern because these bird populations are trying to tell us something.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that we're very fortunate to have NRRI in our region. You know, we've got the best of the best doing research in our backyard and in a variety of things. But, you know, Alexis, Minnesota does have a very diverse bird population. What are some of the species that raise concern for you right now?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different groups of species. One is the bird species that are habitat specialists that depend on our boreal peatland forests, so our tamarack, black ash forests. They're at the very southern edge of the range here in Minnesota, and I think they're experiencing a lot of change with a pest called eastern larch beetle and maybe some regeneration issues in general. And so those are species like the Connecticut warbler. We've seen just a straight decline over the past 20 years or so. Boreal chickadee, olive-sided flycatcher, Canada jay. Those are some species that have been declining relatively rapidly here in Minnesota. Another group of species are ones that are short distance migrants, meaning they come back to Minnesota in the spring, so March, April. And I think we all don't need to be weather experts to know that our springs are very dynamic, and it gets warm and then it gets cold and then it snows again. And those have been really challenging, I think, for short distance migrants that come back early and try and start nesting. So we've seen some of those species declining. Those are also species that tend to rely on older forests. So species like winter wren, brown creeper have been decreasing relatively recently and are definitely a cause for concern. And then nationally, we've been seeing a decrease in aerial insectivores. So those are bird species that fly around and catch insects while they're flying. And we've been seeing declines in populations across North America with those guys, and we see them here in Minnesota as well.
Are there any species that are doing particularly well over the last number of decades?
Yeah, there's what I would call habitat generalists are really doing great. Just birds that just like forests in general and don't have really specific niches that they're responding to. So things like blue jay, which I like, and a lot of people don't, but I like them. Red-breasted nuthatch, black-throated green warblers, Nashville warblers, are all species that, again, are forest birds but can use a lot of different habitats. And so they've been doing really well across the board.
You know, you mentioned the blue jay. I have a nest in a white spruce right near my driveway, and this is the second time in 40 years that I have discovered a blue jay nest, just because it's probably so obvious that it was hard to miss. But I'm wondering, has technology changed over the years in terms of the work that you're doing? It seems to me it used to be people went out and they did these routes where they would stop and listen for a certain amount of time, record the bird songs that they heard. Is that still how it's done, or have you changed your technology at all, changed your methods at all?
Yeah, so we still do use those methods because they are awesome and they work really well, and it's a great way to get data across a big landscape. So we call those point counts. So we have crew point counts, but we've also supplemented with a lot of other technologies recently as well. So we have these automated recorders that we set out so we can hear birds over time in a forest and get more information. It's really useful for secretive species that don't call as often and that you might miss on a point count. But one of the types of technology that we've been using a lot is something called transmitters, radio transmitters. And these are just little teeny weeny little batteries with a big antenna, and they send out basically a radio pulse, and we can go out and track birds to see where they're moving, what kind of habitats they're using. We've been using that technology quite a bit to learn about birds, particularly in that post-breeding period. So we've been focusing on juveniles after they leave the nest. Where do they go? What do they do? What habitats are they using before they get ready to migrate out of Minnesota and back down south?
Any surprises yet? I mean, it may be early to interpret the data, but are there any surprises in that kind of research?
You know, it's really interesting. We're doing it with a lot of different species, American woodcock, golden wing warblers, veery. And what's surprising is that each species, and maybe it's not surprising, but each species sort of has its own thing that it does. Some stay really close together and stay in their family groups. Others just disperse out right away and sort of take on their own. A lot of juveniles join up in mixed species flocks. And so it's just like a sort of gang of high schoolers roaming around the forest together after they leave their parents. And so it's really interesting in that way, both socially. But in terms of habitat, they're really looking for, a lot of the species that we're looking for are using one habitat with a lot of dense cover the first couple of weeks after they leave the nest. And then once they get better at flying, they're really just going anywhere that they can get to in a decent amount of time. So the patterns aren't very clear, but they're kind of all doing a similar thing at a very broad scale.
Will you tell us about some of the things that you're focusing on right now? What kind of research are you doing?
Yeah, so one of our big projects right now is focusing on boreal chickadees up in the Norris Camp, sort of Red Lake Peatlands wildlife management area. And we have a bunch of nest boxes out there because they're cavity nesters, and they will use nest boxes, which make them a lot easier to study. And we are looking at what provides good quality habitat. We're looking at insect communities, forest structure, previous forest management, how fast they grow, the nest survival, and then tracking those juveniles over space too. And there's different amounts of fragmentation in our study sites up there. And so it'll be interesting to see how they cross these big open areas compared to staying in the sort of sheltered mature black spruce that they really like to stay in during the breeding season. And another one, we're doing something very similar with golden wing warbler in the black duck area actually this year. And we're looking at nests. We're looking at young early successional forests and also the shrubby wetland habitat that they use. And looking for nests, tracking the nests, taking the juveniles, and again, getting some information on insect, forest structure, and what sort of makes that habitat quality for these juveniles so we can get as many individuals to survive during the breeding season. So theoretically, then we can increase populations the following year.
I mentioned I discovered this blue jay nest almost by accident. I always find nests in the most obvious places, it seems, after the leaves have fallen in the fall, vireo nests, various other nests. How do you go about finding a golden wing warbler's nest?
It's tricky, and it takes a lot of time. And it takes a lot of expertise, and it takes just, you know, being very in tune with what the birds are doing. So the, you know, the male birds will sing and sort of defend a territory. But then the females are so secretive. You can be on the plot every single day and almost never see a female. And really it's when the eggs hatch and the juveniles are sort of begging for food from the parents, that's when it's the easiest to find them. But if you miss that, it can just be very tricky. And so a lot of effort goes in, and I'm sure the field crew gets very frustrated daily.
No doubt.
So 2 years ago, I had boreal chickadees at my feeder, and since then, the last two winters, they've been absent. So I don't know what happened. There hasn't really been any much change around, and they don't really migrate, do they?
They have seasonal, what I would call movements, where they can sort of flock up and sort of move around the landscape together. But that is one of the questions. They're very understudied, and they're, again, right at the southern edge of the range, relatively low density. So it's hard to know what they do in general and what their populations are. But that's exactly what we're trying to find out, is learn more about all aspects of their ecology while we can.
Let's kind of,
okay, you know,
oh, go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead. I was just going to, you know, what would you like to see ideally over the next, say, 25 years or so, a change in Minnesota's forest that you think would be beneficial, or changes that would be really beneficial to the overall bird population?
Well, Minnesota is so great because it has such a diverse amount of forest habitat. And then it's also great in terms of forest management, because there's very educated forest managers. And we talk a lot with the wildlife folks and the forest managers. There's a lot of educational opportunities. I think the challenges to Minnesota's forests are forest pests, climate change, and we're really going to see issues with regeneration and sort of keeping the forested lands forested. In terms of bird populations, I think there's really an urgency that we need to have. We need to start doing things a little bit differently, trying new things to maintain a habitat or habitats that are suitable for some of the birds that we're seeing these declining populations with. And that's going to take innovation that's not always built into maybe state policies or federal policies. And so working with counties and figuring out how to do unique and adaptive forest management is something that we should really be focusing on. And again, with a sense of urgency and looking at it across the landscape as well.
Are there things that individuals can do to help native bird populations?
Yeah, definitely. In your own yard, thinking about native plants instead, and, you know, lawns and pavement don't make great bird habitat no matter what bird species you are. So trees, bushes, anything that provides nectar or seeds or berries that birds could use for shelter or food, either during the breeding season or during migration, is awesome for all birds. Preventing window strikes, if you're a house that has big windows, doing anything to break up the reflections that the birds might be seeing to think that they're actually flying through a forest, that's very helpful. It kills a lot of birds on all the houses, really. Keeping your cats indoors. Buying things like shade-grown coffee really helps them on their wintering grounds. And also, it's really great coffee. And so if you're a coffee connoisseur, that's a great option to look for bird-friendly coffee. But then just obvious things like avoiding pesticides, reducing your plastic, recycling, all of that will make the environment better for birds as well.
That's Alexis Grindy, wildlife ecologist from the Natural Resources Research Institute, along with Mark Jacobs. Mark, next month, what are we going to be focusing in on?
Well, as we talked about earlier, you know, we want this show to kind of identify some issues, natural resource related issues in our region, and then also look at some creative solutions. So hopefully next month we'll be looking at some examples of Forestry for the Birds, which is a project that's started out east and is spreading across the country rapidly. Talk to some people involved with that program.
Sounds great. Alexis, Mark, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show. Coming up, Beale Street Caravan, and then Pat Miller is your host for On the River at 10 o'clock.